Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we had quite a week this week. I was in court all week long. It was one of the weeks that you always sit down and talk about. We had a double murder trial. And what made it so interesting is that this young man came up with a good defense. I mean, he had a good defense for the double murder. And when you think about stuff like that, the first thing comes to your mind is that this man should be sent to prison for the rest of his life. But his idea was that it was done in self-defense. Allegedly, one of the guys shot at him, and he returned the fire and shot and killed this young man. And then this is what sent him to prison. He walked up on him and shot him directly in the head. That blew his self-defense. It blew it. He had a great attorney. I tell you, this guy, you don't get good attorneys here in Barron County, Michigan. Most of them take a dive. Most of them do not fulfill their obligation to the defendant. And I must say, this time, this guy, he came in from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and did an excellent, excellent job. This guy had a good chance of walking away from this double murder. Good chance. And I sat through it every single day and trying to figure out what was going to happen. Here in Barron County, we always have something like a 10-2. You have always 10 to 12 whites on the jury. Very seldom do you ever have two blacks. Very seldom. Anytime that you get two blacks on any jury here in Barron County, you have to stand up and salute it because it just don't happen. It's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is down here. You got to keep it moving. You got to keep it going. You got to do what needs to be done. But we live in a very small community, Benton Harbor, Michigan. But we got to stand up and fight back. We have to learn to fight back. There's nothing more important than fighting back. But before we get into our main topic today, I want to talk a little bit about the water crisis that we're having here in Benton Harbor, Michigan. We have what you call a crisis, a water crisis. And it's unfortunate, but it's here. It's live right here. The water is so bad that it is undrinkable. You cannot drink the water here in Benton Harbor, Michigan. But the sad part about it, the elected officials refused to tell the people that the water was bad. They were willing to poison the people. So Whirlpool Corporation could sell their homes around this new Jack Nicklaus signature golf course. That's correct. They was willing to poison the people. Let the people die. We don't even know how many people have died from the water here. They usually come up with another excuse, but a lot of people was dying. Nobody said a mumbling word. Nobody talked about it. We went out and started testing the water, BANCO, the Black Autonomy Network Community Organization, and we had the help of the University of Michigan Biological Department, the lab. They tested the water and discovered that the water was dangerous to drink. It had more lead in there. It had what they call PFAS. BAS, and bacterial chemicals. Everything was in the water. And they never wanted to talk about it. The non-elected officials here are black. But they never care about the people in the community. Because why would you want to not tell people that the water was not drinkable to just to sell a few homes? It makes no sense to me. But we fought it. We went out here. Now what we have done, we have made them. We was packing up, passing out water filters to the residents here. So they would not let Banco, a black organization, stand tall. So now the state has come in and demanded that everybody be given a water filter in the whole community. But there's another problem. Everybody here do not have transportation. Some people work. Some people can't get to the water filters. But you got to figure out how you're going to get there to save your children. People have been drinking that water for years and getting sick behind it. And nobody really cared. The only thing they wanted to do was sell the homes that surrounded this golf course. The people don't matter no more. But when are we going to stand up and say no more? It's time that we stood up and say no more. It's time that we start fighting back, standing up for what's right, doing the things that we need to do to make things happen. And this is something we can do. We can do this, but you got to want to do it. But let me get back to our main topic today, because my good friend Belinda Brown from Slidell, Louisiana, she's doing a magnificent job. I gotta say this to her. I'm so proud of her that I don't even know what to say, because many times people, they take the ball but they only run for a couple of yards. My friend Belinda Brown had took the ball and ran for 100 yards and a touchdown. She had went beyond the call of duty. She's fighting for the people there. She has reached out to them. She's doing things that most people don't ever think about doing. And she has stood tall. I'm so proud of her. I don't know what to tell you. I can't even describe her right now, because she's just, you know, she has taken it and ran with it. And now she's a force. She's a force to be reckoned with. And believe me, I am so proud of her. My wife is so proud of her. And we just, you know, just to see her do this and take charge like the way she do is so, so amazing. And we're on to something here. They got this 10-2 law, and we're trying to fight to get Mr. Victor out of prison. Mr. Victor has some of the best issues that, you know, you can come up with. But you can have all the good issues in the world. It doesn't mean a thing if the people are not behind this man. We have to get behind them and force them to do the right thing. And this is something we can do. A lot of times people don't step in and fight unless it's a member of their family, somebody they know. But if you wait until you get to somebody you know and want to fight, it's too late. We have to stand up for everybody. We got to get out here and fight. We got to stand up and let them know that we're ready to take this thing to the next level, you know. And there's strength in numbers. And here's the thing. See, one thing people go around talking about, you know, you don't have to like everybody to fight the same fight. If your cause is right there, stand up and fight. It might be me today, but you tomorrow. And this is something that we can do. And we're going to have Mr. Ron Healy on today. I don't know what number he might be calling in on, but he's the attorney for Mr. Victor. If Mr. Healy, if you're online, please press 1 so we'll know you're there. Because I think it's crucial that you get a chance to explain
to us what's really going on here. We have some of my attorneys on the line also, Buck Davis, Hugh Davis from Detroit, Tim Holloway from Taylor, Michigan, Mike Steinberg, Mark Fancher, Ted Parrish, and that's it so far. But I'm expecting a couple more to come on so they can hear. And they want to give you a helping hand, Mr. Haley, so we can proceed on and take this thing to the next level. So let's see, can we bring in Mr. Haley? Mr. Haley, are you there?
Rev, thank you so much for having me on today, and good evening to everyone, all the good folks in Michigan.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's an honor to have you on because I know that you got your hands full on this case, and I know that you know exactly what you need to do and what level you're going to take it to. But also I want you to know we have Mike Steinberg from the ACLU on the line and Mark Fancher, he's on the line. They're all listening. And my good friend Hugh Davis from the Constitution, he's with the Lawyers Guild. And my good friend, my own personal attorney, Ted Parrish, and Tim Holloway. And those are mine. And they all want to hear and give you a hand and give you as much help as possible to make your job as easy as possible to take this thing to a whole different level. And why don't you introduce yourself and tell people who you are, so they'll know who you are, and because I think this is just too big not to tell, and I think that you should get the glory behind us one way or the other, you see. Win or lose, I think, you know, because you have taken the ball and you're gonna need with Duncan. Most people will be probably too intimidated to even go this far and fight for this man. But let's talk about you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, thank you for all the kind words, Rev. You know, one thing I'm going to be clear, you know, what we're after is justice. I believe in chasing for justice, and whatever comes from that, be it glory or nothing at all, the idea of chasing for something that seems so precious but yet so hard to get is something that I do. 37 years old. I'm a lawyer from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, graduated from LSU Law School in 2006, opened my law practice up right after that, and God willing, 11 years later, here I am. I've been fortunate enough to be on the right side of some pretty big cases in Louisiana. One of the most recent ones is the gentleman by the name of Raheem Howard, who Baton Rouge police officer said during a traffic stop pulled out a firearm and fired it at a police officer. Citywide manhunt ensued, and this 22-year-old man without a felony criminal conviction on his record was arrested for attempted first-degree murder of a police officer and legal use of a weapon, a crime that, if maxed out, could have possibly seen him serve almost the rest of his life, if not the rest of his life, in jail. We were able to prove in 27 days of his arrest that the officer was lying, and the district attorney's office wound up dropping all charges on him. The police officer was fired, and we now have a civil suit against the city of Baton Rouge for that officer's actions. That, over the past probably 5 or 6 months, I don't know if this is fortunate that I've come across some folks that needed help, but it's unfortunate that some of the same problems. I've had at least 4 or 5 different excessive use of force cases throughout the state of Louisiana that has ended up on my doorstep, one of which a gentleman by the name of Stephen Young, who literally ended up on my doorstep, busted up and beat it up after being bonded out of jail to tell me his story. And we have his case as well. That's a little bit about myself and the most recent history, you know, that I have fighting these causes. But, you know, I believe in this. I mean, this is something when I got out of law school, this is I didn't get this type of work right away, but this is the type of work that I envisioned myself doing in becoming a lawyer, and I'm glad to be a part of the team and the community that is behind Mr. Victor. We have a lot going on in his case. There are a lot of moving parts, of one of which is to make sure we get retroactive the recent unanimous jury law that was passed in Louisiana this past November. That short version of it is this: all crimes committed after January 1st, 2019 have individuals must be found guilty by unanimous jury on all cases, not just six-pack juries, but 12-packs as well. I think from a practical standpoint, you know, these are the old Jim Crow laws that were used to jail and further disenfranchise black and brown people in this country. But beyond the race point, just it makes practical sense when you think of the premise of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, that all jurors should have to vote for that. Because if one person has reasonable doubt, you know, we need to make sure before we taking folks' freedom away from them and taking their lives away from them, that as much as all the doubt can be erased, because, you know, if we don't, that is a very, very slippery slope that unfortunately many, many of us have fallen victim to. And, you know, as in Mr. Victor's case, the slope to fall down is a lot easier than to climb back up.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%, because I know how difficult it is. Just imagine, you know, I can sit here and tell you stories that you would probably not believe. But one of the things, and one of the main issues that you're going to be tackling when it comes to Mr. Victor is the First Amendment issue. Can you talk a little bit about that? Let us know that First Amendment. Because to me, anytime it has to do with the Constitution, those are reason enough for the not only the Court of Appeal, but also like we have a Court of Appeals here. I don't know how you have it down there, and you go through the Court of Appeal first, then you go to the Supreme Court here. But we have been in the Court of Appeals many times, and also to the Supreme Court, and been fortunate enough to win on both levels, which is a beautiful thing. But unfortunately, everybody don't get that opportunity. But one of the issues that we had here was a First Amendment issue. When I was accused of threatening a judge's life with a Bible scripture, and unfortunate for me, they sent me to prison. But maybe fortunate for me, they did, but it was overturned because they said that, you know, freedom, the First Amendment kicked in. But can you talk a little bit about that First Amendment issue with Mr. Victor?
Well, I mean, chime in on this, Rev. I don't want to get too much in detail on the First Amendment issue.
As much time as you're willing to give. You got to flow today.
Well, I don't want to jump too deep into the First Amendment issue because I think it stems into the facts of his case in chief, which we are trying to get back into court and hopefully get a new trial and get a verdict of not guilty. You know, but I think the big issues right now, as far as how do we get to that point to be able to prove his case in chief, you know, has to do with this Fourth Amendment due process rights and 14th Amendment due process rights that I think are violated if this law is not deemed retroactive. But in Mr. Victor's case, which makes his unique, is that even though he was found guilty by a 10-2 verdict, and, you know, we could talk off the air on the foolishness that surrounded the factual conviction of Mr. Victor, that I think if the jurors are made aware of all those things going on, that would have been reasonable doubt enough in my mind. But what makes this unique is that he's still on direct appeal. And there is Supreme Court cases out there that says that cases on a direct appeal are to get the benefit of the retroactivity of a law. And I believe that at the very least, and Rev, we talked about this at length when we spoke on the phone. I think at the very least, any cases that are opened, either on direct appeal or that have not gone to trial yet, must get the benefit of this unanimous jury law. Simply put, it's not a change in the substantive law of any particular crime. So, for instance, let's say the crime of murder in Louisiana carries a life without benefit of parole unless you're juvenile, and we had one of the first cases in Louisiana after Miller v. Alabama, and we were able to get a juvenile who was accused of killing and found guilty of killing three people, a 35-year sentence, as opposed to him being sent to jail for the rest of his life for a crime that he allegedly committed at the age of 15 years old. But this is not changing the law in that aspect. As if, let's say, again, murdered life beyond without the benefit. Let's say sometime in 2020 they changed the law on murder to say it's a 30-year max sentence. There's good argument that what the law is at the time you commit the crime, you should do that punishment. But when you talk about changing the compensation of what it takes to find someone guilty after a trial, that is not a substantive law that you're changing. That is a rule of criminal procedure. And even though that may sound like a boring argument to make, I think it is one of the most effective arguments to make, is that we can't have different rules on how court is conducted depending upon when the crime took place. So right now in Louisiana, if Rev, if you were to commit a crime on December 31st at 11:59:59 of 2018, you would not get the benefit of having a unanimous jury. However, if you would have committed that crime 1 second later, you would get the benefit of a unanimous jury, even though the cases will be going on at the same time. That's like if you're playing a game of football, that we're going to have pass interference 1 year and no pass interference the next year. And I know my folks down in Louisiana don't think there's
that. Oh, absolutely.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, we can't have different rules for the same game. I think that is the most effective argument to make.
And I agree with that 100%. And I think another big thing is that he's still on direct appeal. Remember the football player, Mr. Hernandez? Remember that he was found guilty of murder. And he was sent to prison, but he was on what they call direct appeal. When he committed suicide, he had not completed his direct appeal, so they had to cancel his conviction out. When he died, and once he died and was buried, he was no longer a convicted felon of that murder. And I think it sounds like a great argument. Because it's on the books, and also it's part of the Constitution that says that. So I kind of think you're going in there with the idea that, you know, I just believe that Mr. Victor have a great chance. I think he's gonna get two bites of this apple. That's what I think. Even if they deny him on this, I think he still has the other opportunity to bite that apple again. I could be wrong, but you're a lawyer. I'm not. Only thing I can do is talk about it. Tell me what you think on that.
Oh, I think he's definitely going to get I think we're going to be fine on the issue that the fact he's on direct appeal, that his case is similarly situated than that person who has committed a crime on December 31st at 11:59:59. I think the United States Supreme Court has spoken on that issue, that any retroactivity would affect cases that are on direct appeal. I don't think that is going to be the fight. I think the fight is going to be whether or not the law as it is constructed right now by limiting individuals that have committed a crime after a certain period of time from this benefit versus those who committed crimes but their cases have not come to trial yet, the benefit of a unanimous jury verdict, I think that is going to be the interstate fight. Because the way the law is written, I mean, it's clear. After January 1st, that's what the voters voted on. Those are the individuals that get the credit for it, not individuals that committed crimes before. But from a practical, and I think it's going to be a legal standpoint, I don't see how that can stand. Again, I'm going to keep on making this point until I'm blue in the face if somebody listens to me or the law gets changed. You cannot have certain rules of court for certain individuals and different rules of court procedure-wise from other individuals. This is an argument of civil procedure. And, again, we can't play the same game by different rules.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And your football analysis is wonderful. And I just believe that this is a great opportunity not only for Mr. Victor, but also for the state of Louisiana and the people there. I think that, you know, one of the things I know, if you fight, you can win. If you don't fight, it's almost impossible to win. And I know what you're up against. I know anytime you go up against a state, I've been court watching for over 30 years. And one of the things that I do, I make sure that, you know, we go in there with the idea that we can win if we fight. And make sure that there's things being done. We would have won a lot of different cases, especially here in the state of Michigan, where we have done a lot of things to just make people understand that, you know, that we have to do the right thing. Whatever it is, it's got to be the right thing. Like I tell folks all the time, you know, I'm real keen on just doing what's right. Then I let God do what he has to do. You see, that's what I believe in, and that's why I go to the courthouse every day, and that's what I do. You can almost count on seeing me here in Barron County every single morning at 9 o'clock. I will be here. But one of the things that I want to talk to you about, I want you to take a few minutes out and just tell the people some of the things that they might expect. Because you got about 5 more minutes that you can actually take, and you can just tell us what you want us to know. That's what I want to do. Just tell us what anything that you feel that we should know. I want you to know. First of all, I know that we got to rally the people, but you tell us what you want us to do and how we can help you.
I think attention to any issue of injustice is important. So the first thing that I think Mr. Victor wants, needs, and what we're going to ask for is for attention to be brought to his case, because I do believe what happened to him was a great injustice. Again, I wish I could get into the details of the actual criminal conviction, but I, you know, always am careful about speaking factually of things before we have a chance to get into court. But we need to bring attention to this issue. I think specifically for Mr. Victor and who I've found and to be a good man, a decent man, and we've had great conversations, you know, on the phone, and he's anxious to get his opportunity again in court because he felt he was done wrong. But I think for beyond Mr. Victor, I think this is an important issue to bring forward in the state of Louisiana to demand more. You know, one of the things I was very proud of, one of the few things we've been proud of recently in of our federal government, was the passing of the First Step Act, which gave a lot of relief to individuals that needed it in the criminal justice system that were imprisoned under federal law. But one of the things that speaking with Jerron in the White House, that this is only a first step. And I like that this is the first step. And I feel that the unanimous jury law that was put into place in Louisiana, although it was not given a moniker, the First Step Act, it is a first step or another step into righting the wrongs of a lot of people. I personally think that anyone that's been found guilty of 10-2, 11-1 should get another day in court. because that means somebody had reasonable doubt to hold out. And you need to be sure before you take somebody's freedom away. You know, then, you know, I will say this. I think Mr. Victor's case is interesting, not only from the legal standpoint, but once we get a chance to prayerfully get back into court to argue the merits of what happened to him, and the fact that we'll be able to peel the banana back on some of the injustices that took place during the course of his arrest, pretrial procedure, his eventual trial, and conviction, it will be mind-blowing for people to grasp and take in. But, you know, what we need is, you know, is attention. The beautiful, there's a lot of ugliness that goes around with social media and how easy it is for folks to communicate and be connected. But there's also beauty into it. And the beauty into it is easy to mobilize. And we need to utilize what is at our disposal to mobilize on this issue, because this is going to be much bigger than a much bigger issue than right and wrong out of St. John Parish. This is going to be something that's going to be hopefully a large domino that will fall, that is going to affect defendants that unfortunately look a lot like you and I, potential future and how to get out. I mean, there's a reason why Louisiana is, you know, if the United States has an incarceration problem, Louisiana per capita is that incarceration problem on steroids. And cases like Mr. Victor's is part of the reason why.
Well, that's, you know, and that's why I will be there to support you and Mr. Victor. We plan on bringing the media ourselves and bringing much attention as possible to this case, because I believe in my heart that this is going to be big. I look at this as being bigger than life. And you mentioned it not just in Louisiana, but I think it's all around the country when people see that people are standing up and doing what needs to be done, you know. And we're doing the right thing. That's the most important thing. We're doing what is right. And Mr. Haley, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time out to talking to me the other day, and also to coming on the show. And we want to get you back on the show right a little bit just before it's time for us to come out there, that maybe that Sunday before or whatever, so we can be ready and get the folks all riled up and ready to go. I would love to have you. And also, if it's okay with you, some of the lawyers that's on the line, they would like to talk to you, and they would like to maybe help you with whatever help that you need them to do, or whatever it is that you need. They're willing to supply whatever your needs are. And these are my friends.
Well, I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, and they love me. We're going to try to make your job as easy as possible, because I'm going to be honest with you and how I feel about this. I smell victory here, and one way or the other, and I think we can do what we need to do. And thank you again, and if you have one closing thought, you may give it to us right fast. And then I got to bring on my good friend from New York, Ralph Pointer. He's his wife was Lynn Stewart. You may have heard of her. She was one of the greatest lawyers that out of New York that you ever had. She's the one who handled the blind sheik. Defense.
I am familiar.
Yes. And she was the attorney. Her husband will be on right after you. He'll be down in Louisiana with me. And we're going to bring people in to support you, to let you know that we got your back. That's the most important thing. So if you take maybe 30 seconds and close out with that for us.
Rev, again, I just want to thank you for the time and the platform to be able to hopefully speak truth to power. This is an important issue, and again, I want to be very clear. This is bigger than just, you know, my client. This is an issue that I think folks need to gravitate to Listen, if you allow injustice to happen on somebody else's block, it's going to come right around and be knocking on your block. And
absolutely,
any help and support that we can get on this issue and in any issue of injustice, I am a humble servant to the issue of fighting for justice cause. And if anybody wants to come out and help serve that same cause, you know, I always say injustice don't sleep, but we don't either. And we're not going to sleep on this and the other cases that we have in the state that we're fighting justice name.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Attorney Haley. I truly, truly appreciate you, and I will be there to meet you personally on March 18th. And in the meantime, you have a great day, and like I said, I'm looking forward to meeting you.
Hey, look, not as much as the other way around, my friend.
All right, then. Listen, we'll talk soon. Thank you so much. And that was the attorney for Aaron Victor. Now we got to bring in my good friend Ralph, one of the greatest activists that I know. He's my friend. He's my guy. Truly a hero. I'm a man. I can't even carry his briefcase. This man, he's just that way. He's just so powerful that, you know, for me to even sit here and describe him, it would take me hours and hours and hours to describe Mr. Ralph Pointer. Ralph Pointer, are you there? Ralph Pointer, are you there? He's not there. Let me go here. Ralph, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, Mr. Ralph Pointer, I tell you, there's nothing like you. You are such an incredible guy. I tell you, I can't even carry your briefcase, you know. And I just wish that we had a million people like you. We could take over this whole country. And and that's all it takes. We as black folks, we're 50 million strong. But if there was a million like you, Ralph, we can change everything. But Ralph, the reason I'm glad you're on, because I'm excited today that you're on the show. But I know there's some things that you want to talk about. Where would you like to start to talk about? Let's talk a little bit about. Did you get a chance to read that brief of Mr. Victor? Ralph Pointer. I lost you. Let me go to my good friend Belinda Brown and come back to Ralph.
Reverend Pinckney, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Thank you so much. I got it wrong. And it, as I was saying, I kind of remind myself of Strom Thurmond before Congress, when he picked up the microphone and started tapping on it and saying to the rest of the congressmen, how do you operate this here sheen? Well, in this age of communication and cell phones and iPhones, I had my button pressed for the wrong way. I was on mute and I didn't know it. And so does anybody out there know how to operate this here sheen? That aside, I am honored and I'm encouraged to hear that other people who have heard about the case are tuning in to hear more about the case and to make a decision as to whether they can be supportive of the case. And this is what it takes to win a case. Support not only by attorneys but by people. But that other people are willing to look at this case is very encouraging. And I'm going to, not being a lawyer, I know one thing that was taught to me by my lawyer wife, Lynn Stewart. And one of the statements she made is, the law is whatever they say it is at any given time. And what that means is, the law in America, for the most part, has been interpreted differently for people of color than people who have no color. And it is interpreted negatively when we're speaking of black people, black and brown people in America. This is history. This is our reality. And in this case, it seems very clear if Mr. Victor were a white person that the law would be interpreted differently. The law would be enacted, or the people who are enforcing the law would have acted differently throughout this case. And this idea of 10-2 is such a part of the reality of the trial, the trials in America, in that the whole question of voting, getting on the rolls to vote, was also to get on the rolls to be on a jury. And it was a long time before people could get on the jury without being on the rolls of being able to vote. And so when people, when black people got the right to vote and got the right to be on a jury, then the prosecutors did everything imaginable in so many cases to keep black people off of the jury. And they were even public about it. They even did videos to teach young prosecutors on how to keep black people off the jury. Now figure how this is further exaggerated when they have a law that says, well, you can let two on, but we'll keep more off. And so it was a setup to get black convictions of people of color. And so it seems very clear to me that, no, let me not say that. I am hopeful that we will be able, through this case, to do something about this interpretation of the law. And that's why I'm going to be in New Orleans with you to speak to people, to bring attention to this case, as I say, in two ways. Once we have been able to get on the register as a voter to be eligible to be on a jury, then they have a law, the 10-2 law, that while you can let two of them on, and I mean people of color, but we're not going to let...
What'd you say? You can let two of them on, huh? You can let two blacks on. That's it. Just two blacks.
Yeah, so they can't be accused of keeping blacks off the jury. All they have to do is keep one of three off the jury. And this is, you know, this makes it, as I say, this exaggerates the injustice of the way that law has been practiced in America from day one. The struggle to get justice and the impediments put up by the injustice system to keep us from getting justice. And so I'm hoping that this case will help in moving us a step closer, as you said, one step at a time. I'm of the James Baldwin persuasion when he says that there is no such thing as the lesser evil. There is only evil. There is no such thing as one step at a time. Let's correct the injustice totally. And I think that we are getting close to the situation where we are able to correct an injustice, but we have to see and understand the injustice before we're able to correct it. And this is a clear case. I think it's New Orleans and Louisiana and Oregon, the last two states carrying this unjust law, 10-2, that we can put a light on to show that the this can no, this should no longer stand. And if Victor, Mr. Victor Case helps us do that, I think it's worth our, you know, struggle to put light on the case to have this conclusion. And so I started off saying I'm encouraged to hear that two major organizations, legal organizations, the Lawyers Guild and the Center for Constitutional Rights, are taking the time or have some representative listen to this case to see, hopefully, that they will be able to get involved in the case. But we, the people, must move with whatever forces that we have. And one force that we know we have are ourselves. And so, as I say again, I'll be with you in Louisiana, where we can get the people of Louisiana involved in this case to make changes in Louisiana as well as in the courts of the country.
Absolutely.
Oregon.
What I'd like for you to do, I'd like you to contact our group Black is Back, and because they the chairman said that he would like to come, and he said also that he said he would like to have some representatives from our group down there. If you can, you know, get in touch with him for me and let him know that, you know, the dates that we're going to be there, and that would be good also. Because he definitely said he wanted to come there, and he also wanted to make sure that we have representation other than me and you there. So we'll see how that play out. Maybe
yes.
You and Betty can get together and send out an email to them and let them know that, you know, we definitely need their support.
Yes, that has been done. When I heard the case, we jumped on that, and I will get back to Chairman O'Malley Yeshitela, and ask if he has been able to do anything. Has he been
Very
able
good.
To contact people to give us more support over these 4 or 5 days that we're going to be in Louisiana?
Sounds good, Ralph. Sounds good. But listen, I got to bring in Melinda Brown and my good friend Joseph Perry, and then I got to bring in my good friend Big Yo. So, I really appreciate you coming on. You know, you're my hero, and there's none like you in the whole wide world. And hey, you know, there's nothing but love for you, my brother. And we will talk very, very soon.
Hey, good thing. Thank you so much, Reverend. Much appreciated. Look forward to seeing you and the lawyer and the victim, Mr. Victor, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks again.
All right, my brother. Talk to you soon.
Hang
All right. There. That was my very, very good friend, Ralph Pointer. He's a hero. He's the real hero. Also, I'm going to bring in my good friend, Melinda Brown, along with Joseph Perry. I want to bring Joseph Perry in. Also, Melinda Brown. Melinda Brown, are you there? Talk to me. Melinda Brown, are you there? Let me move on to Joe. Joseph Perry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Reverend. Thank you for having me today.
Hey, it's my honor to have you, young man. You are another one of my big heroes, Joe. I don't know how, you know, I can function without you. You're one of the good guys who I talk to daily, and I really appreciate you. But what I want you to talk about, tell us how all this all started. Give us a little history about this. And because I think that's important for people to know. And you can start where you wish. Just tell
Pastor
us a little
Pinkney,
bit.
Am I on with Joe?
You are on with Joe. Well, I thought maybe somebody had kidnapped you, Belinda Brown. I didn't know
no,
what to do.
I'm so excited. Pastor Pinkney, I just want to give everybody an update, but you can let Joe go ahead. But give me enough time to announce, you know, the campaign that we're organizing and mobilizing the people so that everybody can know what's going on. Go ahead, Joe.
Very good. Go ahead, Big Joe. Take care of your business.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did a little research on it, and the law that was overturned on November 6th by Louisiana voters of 30, I'm sorry, 65% of the voters came out and voted it down, was this 10-2 law. And it finds its origins in 1898 at a constitutional convention in Louisiana. At that constitutional convention, the original law was 9-3, that they only needed 9 jurors in order to convict you and send you to jail for the rest of your life, which really meant that you were going to be under a new kind of slavery. Let me just read this before I go into the Louisiana thing. This was the law of the land in the 13th Amendment. Let me read it to you. This is Section 1 of the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution reads as such: neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. And then Section 2 is, Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. And I submit to everybody that when they're referring to appropriate legislation, they're referring to what went on in Louisiana in 1898. This 13th Amendment was passed in 1865. So what happened was during Reconstruction, you had blacks that were voted into office into very high places of office. So they had to do something about that. So what they did is put Reconstruction to an end, and then some 20-something years later, 30-something years later, I think it's 23 years later, they come up with this convention, constitutional convention, making the 9-3 law. And then in 1974, there was another constitutional convention which made it a little bit better. They turned the 9-3 law into a 10-2 law, which was then voted down by a referendum on November 6th by the voters of Louisiana. But let me read for you sort of so people can get an idea of what's behind this law, what's wrong with this law. I mean, most of us feel like, oh, we had a black president. Oh, we had a civil rights movement. We had this, we had that. It's the post-racial America. No, it's not. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people are coming to that understanding with a lot of things that President Trump is doing. But let me read for you this. This comes from the actual comments of the people who were running that constitutional convention in Louisiana in 1898. And by the way, during the proceedings, you know, they keep notes and what have you. And, you know, you can look it up online. You can read everything that was spoken and said at that constitutional convention. So anyway, the guy that was the president of the Constitutional Convention, his name was Ernest Krutschnit, and he was the president of the convention. And in his final words, in his opening remarks, in the last paragraph of his opening remarks, this is what he said, and I quote, "May this hall where 32 years ago, the Negro first entered upon the unequal contest for supremacy, and which has been reddened with his blood, now witness the evolution of our organic law, which will establish the relations between the races upon an everlasting foundation of light and justice," to which he was applauded. And the Constitutional Convention was broken into parts. One of the parts was the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee was headed by a gentleman by the name of Thomas Semmes. This is what Thomas Semmes had to say. He was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Quote, "We met here to establish the supremacy of the white race. Now then, what have we done? Is the question. Our mission was, in the first place, to establish the supremacy of the white race in this state to the extent to which it could be legally and constitutionally done. And what has our ordinance on suffrage, the constitutional means by which we propose to maintain that ascendancy done? We have established throughout the state white manhood suffrage," unquote. Last, this guy Ernst Krutschnit, who was the president, Krutschnit, I'm messing his name up. Anyway, Krutschnit.
Sound like
is
he's
his
German,
name.
Huh?
I guess so. Anyways, this is him again. "We have placed it within the power of the people of this state to have election as fair, as pure, as those of the state of Massachusetts herself. And I say to you that we can appeal to the conscience of the nation of the nation, both judicial and legislative, and I don't believe that they will take the responsibility of striking down the system which we have reared in order to protect the purity of the ballot box and to perpetuate the supremacy of the Anglo-Saxon race in Louisiana. All right, so this 9-3 law that came out of there was a major part of legislation for them to obtain that white supremacy. And we see right down to today that they don't want to let go of it. They want to keep it around as long as possible. I've just saw online where they're planning to have another constitutional convention in Louisiana in 2020. My guess is their intention is to find a way to negate what the voters of Louisiana did last November 6th when they voted this law down and said, hey, after the first of the year, if you commit a crime, you're going to be like everybody else in the United States. You're going to get a unanimous a jury where all 12 people on that jury are going to try over your case and decide your fate, and not just 10 or, whatever, hand-picked juries. So, I mean, this is just an extra tool in their toolbox. I mean, like you explained what they were doing in Michigan, there's a lot of ways they can get around this, but this just gives them extra.
That's right.
And my question is, what else is going on in the United States? What else is going on out there? Laws are like this that are still in the books that need to be gone.
That's right.
Listen,
hey, I appreciate that, but we're running out of time, and I got to let Belinda finish it up. But what I want you to say that for me, because we got to let the people know, because it's important that we educate them on different things. So I really, really appreciate you. But Belinda, you only got a couple of minutes. Tell us what you want to know, and let's take it from there. Joe, thank you so much.
Thank you, Pastor Pinckney. Thank you very much. And those are some excellent points that Joe was making. But just to make it all clear, the law was racist back then, and we're saying that it's racist now. And that's the reason why we have started unanimous is not enough campaign. Unanimous is not enough campaign. And we're going to be having the rally, Pastor Pinckney. I hope that you arrive here on the 14th of March. And we got the rally set for the 16th, and we're going to rally, and all the people, we're asking them to come out and stand with us from all over the country, because we are, like you said, Pastor Pinckney, I've been trained by the best, and that's you, that this is big. And I'm very optimistic about the fact that we have the victory if we all unite and stand together. And we can go after our number one quest, and that is to eradicate the 13th Amendment, because I don't want to live in a world where we can still have people be slaves and other people can make billions of dollars off of putting people in prison and making money. And that's what we want to end, Pastor Pinckney, here in the state of Louisiana and across this country, is that, Mr. Victor Case, like Brother Ralph was saying, that the fix was in, and the fix makes me want to throw up every time I think about how this man was railroaded through the criminal justice system. It was a disgrace, and we all need to stand up, because it could have been anybody. And I'm telling you, Pastor Pinckney, his kids are still in a nightmare right now that they can't even wake up from. So with that said, we're asking everybody to come. Please come and stand with us and let Louisiana take the lead for this type of justice that we all need. Because if Louisiana can take the lead in being the mass incarceration, as known as the mass incarceration per capita, then we can take the lead and be known for justice and liberty and freedom for all. Thank you, Pastor Pinckney, for the time.
Also, remember this, Belinda. Put out the address of the court so people so they'll know exactly where to come during that period of time. It's crucial that they know exactly the location of the courthouse, because it's my understanding The courthouse is a small courthouse, and it could be anywhere. So people need to know exactly where it's at. So if you can do that, put that out there, that would be wonderful, so people can know. I want to tell everybody. I want to thank Mr. Haley for coming on the show. Ralph Pointer, Joe Perry, Belinda Brown, and all the listeners today. We had a tremendous crowd of people on the show. We may have went over the big numbers that I've been shooting for, and now we look like we're right where we need to be. But we need to tell people to get out there and stand up and fight back. I didn't get a chance to bring in my good friend, a Big Yo from Chicago. But this is too big to even wait, and I think that I'm excited about this. But we must continue to stand up and fight back. The key word, fight back.
You want me to announce that right now? You want me to announce the address?
Please.
Okay, it's going to be March the 18th at the 40th District Court in Agard. That's the 40th District Court in Agard. And you can also read the People's Tribune. Joe Perry did an excellent article on the Louisiana Jim Crow laws overturned, and it has all the contact information and phone number for myself. And